If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this very special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, which amounts to nothing less than a scoop, courtesy of my co-host Phil Jones, the Managing Director of Brother UK. Phil, yesterday you headed west from Tameside to Stewart Street to visit the National Cycling Centre and to interview John Dutton, British Cycling's new chief executive. Tell us all about that.
I did indeed, Tim. And what a surprise I got when I got to the National Cycling Centre. Huge amount of construction going on outside the entrance where they're putting in a huge, massive, great big electric vehicle charging station, solar powered it looks like. So that would be a fantastic resource for Greater Manchester. And of course, John also reliably informed me that it was the first day that the coffee shop had reopened within the National Cycling Centre. So my visit was very, very well timed. And I think this is quite a scoop for the podcast, Tim. John confirmed to me that this is the first major interview that he's actually given to anybody. You know, he's only a month into the role. So for him to give me an hour of his time and to sort of have a conversation about a topic, you know, which is quite narrow in amongst his entire portfolio. John's walked in having to organise the World Championships. He's got all these sporting disciplines. And then kind of I rock up and with my little folder underneath my arm wanted to talk about the road racing scene. So I think it was very, very gracious of him to give up his time.
Excellent stuff. And already a step change, Phil, that this chief executive is clearly keen to talk to people outside of the National Cycling Centre. That's a great sign. Well, look, let's not waste any more time here. Let's listen now to Phil in conversation with John Dutton, as we say, British Cycling's new chief exec. And Phil, if you don't mind sticking around, then perhaps we can reflect afterwards on the key points from the interview.
Welcome to the latest of our Brother Cycling podcast. And regular listeners will remember we talked about the new CEO of British Cycling and we put an appeal out. John, would you like to come on the Brother Cycling podcast? And ladies and gentlemen, here I am today in the National Cycling Centre. It's 2 o'clock, it's Thursday afternoon, and I'm sat opposite John Dutton, the new chief executive of British Cycling. So, John, firstly, thank you for listening to our appeal.
My pleasure, Phil. Look, it's an absolute privilege to be in the position that I'm in, 4 weeks into the role. Delighted to be talking to you. I have listened to the podcast, listened to a lot on the drive to Lincoln, and I know we're going to touch on that a little later. But yeah, really want to make a connection with your community, with the broader cycling community, and here to make a difference.
Well, fantastic. Well, let's start at the beginning, shall we, John? Because clearly, if you were to look you up, and I did, of course, you straight to LinkedIn, what your history is, and you have a very, very long career in all things sport, spanning nearly 3 decades, actually. Just give us a quick start to learn a bit more about you. Talk us through your career today to sort of, I guess, to what led you here.
Yeah, absolutely. Just really privileged to have worked my entire career in sport. So I went to Northumbria University, did a degree in sport management. I think at that point, I still aspired to be a professional athlete, ideally a rugby player. And I realised I was neither good enough nor brave enough, to be perfectly honest. But came out of university, worked on the European Golf Tour, which was my first role. So 22 years old, travelling the world with a wonderful itinerary. Worked on the Ryder Cup in 97, which was Tiger Woods' first ever Ryder Cup. Came out of that, worked in football for the FA. Was also privileged to work on the Champions League final in 2003 at Old Trafford. Then set my own business up, worked across multiple sports. And then for the last 12 years, I've worked in rugby league. There was a little bit in between that, which we can cover in a second, which was in 2014. I was the director of readiness of the Grand Depart. And pre-coming here to British Cycling, been on the board of the UCI Cycling World Championships that are going to happen in August. So a lot of sport, work with professional athletes, worked in community settings, have a real genuine passion for cycling. So just an absolute privilege and a pleasure to be here at British Cycling, and go back to what I said at the start, I'm here to make a difference.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, John, you know, when we met today, I'd figured out that you were from Lee in Lancashire, which I know a lot about that town. I know you're a very proud Lather, as they call them, and absolutely a rugby league man through and through. And it's sort of no surprise, really, that you did the job that you did. And you look like you did a fantastic, you know, you had a fantastic impact. Lots of challenges, it looked like, lots of crises that you managed, all sorts of various different things when you're chair of rugby league. So what brought you here then? What sort of made you think, actually, do you know what, it's time to have a change from rugby and switch into cycling?
Yeah, I'm in the rugby league element. My dad took me to my first rugby league game when I was five. So I'm in my 45th season of watching my hometown club. Sports always played a huge part of my life. And the last 12 years have been privileged not just to work on one rugby league World Cup, but three. 2013, 2017, and our delayed tournament. The tournament we delivered, our evaluation report is just about to be published, and it says tournament with a purpose, tackling inequalities through providing opportunities. It doesn't actually talk in the title about 61 games, 32 teams, elite athletes. And you're absolutely right, the amount of challenge and overcoming adversity, it's the hardest thing I've ever done in my professional career, but what's out of that, incredibly proud of our achievement. And I think there are so many similarities coming here now into cycling. If I start with my very first job interview for this role, and I was asked the question of why did I want the chance to be CEO, and I said it was serendipitous. First of all, I'd come to the end of my contract. We'd delivered the World Cup. I was looking for a new challenge. I think there are some challenges here in the organisation, in the sport, which I really walk towards. But also, there are many opportunities, and that's exactly what we achieved in rugby league. I'm from Manchester. We're sat here at a wonderful headquarters. Some new improvements being made to the Velodrome, BMX, and just the facilities we have here in Manchester. So I'm a proud Leather from Lee. I'm also incredibly proud of being from the north of England, and I want to shout from the rooftops about sport and about, in particular, cycling and the difference it can make to the entire population.
Now, you've used the word purpose quite a lot, actually, already in the sort of just in the opening few minutes of our discussion here, and you seem very purpose-led, John. So sort of what do you think then, as part of your purpose, you're aiming to achieve here? So you've talked about some of those things, and of course we've got lots of things to cover, including world championships, and you've got participation. You know, there's so many things you can do in this role. So what underlying all of that do you think you want to be your purpose while you're here as CEO?
I think fundamentally, if we start and we can explore the sport element, the talent pathway, into podium and elite, but fundamentally it's about more people enjoying cycling, being on a bike, that feeling liberating, empowering, giving freedom, from active travel all the way through to winning gold medals. And that, I think, is the purpose of the organisation. Everyone will find their place. And the same with our project in rugby league. A lot of the things that we delivered were about working with communities to tackle some of the social mobility challenges that we face and some of the social purpose challenges we face, and whether that was volunteering, coaching, education, developing mental fitness, resilience, well-being, etc. If we can use the wonderful power that cycling has, we can do some more amazing things. So definitely purpose-led, and that starts here in the organisation with culture. We've got some amazing people. We can talk about some of our challenges, not least some of the financial constraints that we and others face, and we will move into a more agile way of delivery, but we will never lose sight of good people, high quality culture, and helping make a difference to people's lives. And whether that's winning gold medals, whether that's enjoying riding on a Saturday or Sunday in your club, or whether that's simply your first ever experience as a child on a bike, and a lot more. And that's the wonderful attraction of cycling to me, to reach the whole of the population in a way that rugby league, rugby union and some other sports just never will have that opportunity.
Now, in our last podcast, John, what I talked about was, you know, when a new CEO comes into a new role, the first 100 days, you know, strategic sensing, doing a lot of listening. And actually, you know, you're doing the engagement bit really well already, because, of course, you're only 4 weeks in and we're talking already, which is brilliant. So, you know, one thing I do know is that there's a huge amount of disciplines that you've got to ensure are successful, right the way from BMX, road, mountain bike, all the, you know, all the disciplines that you've got and got to go and deliver on. You've got huge number of stakeholders in terms of regions and Scottish Cycling, and you've got UK Sport and Sport England, and you've got all the various boards and governance. You know, it's quite complex. So sort of thinking about your first 100 days here as CEO then, sort of what's on your mind?
Five things. First of all, and you've already mentioned it, is actively listening. I think it's really important. I have some knowledge, and it's been interesting the first few weeks, just trying to broaden my horizon and all of those different stakeholders, partners, groups, people that have that corporate knowledge to go and actively listen. I think the second bit is linked to that, is learning. So I do come here with some knowledge, but I've got plenty to learn. And I think if I'm still the CEO here in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, I will still have some things to learn and have a real unquenchable desire to learn and look outside at the world. I regard myself as a futurologist, look to the future and make sure that we are proactive and not reactive. I think the third point is getting out. So being visible in the organisation. And I've just found it a pleasure. Still not quite got to know everyone's name just yet, but I'm working hard on that, because of course we have people here in the centre and people out in the regions, but going out and seeing people and being visible. And I think then the more fundamental taking us forward is about accepting responsibility and being a leader. I've inherited a set of circumstances. I wasn't here 12 months ago, 2 years ago. I've inherited some really positive things. I've inherited some challenges. None of that matters. What matters now is for me to take responsibility and take ownership of those challenges and move us forward. And then the fifth area is to address the challenges head on, and some are immediate, but never ever lose sight of the opportunities, because I think the opportunities are greater than our challenges. And that effectively is my first 100 days that I'm sure we'll move into whatever comes next. We are, if I describe myself, I would say relentless, determined. Hopefully people will find me humble, but absolutely here to make a difference and drive the organisation forward.
So you said the word immediate just a moment ago. So what's immediate for you?
I think it immediately is like every other national governing body, and some are quite well documented in the public eye at the moment. Sport and the lingering impacts of COVID is still with us. Sports NGBs, national governing bodies, have less resource than ever before. So we need to make sure that we are proactive, that we, whatever we have, whether it's given by government, our commercial partners, what we then self-generate, that investment is going in to making a difference in the cycling community. We will probably have less resource than we had the halcyon days that have come before. We need to cut our cloth accordingly. And I was asked a really interesting question, done two all-team sessions, staff sessions so far. You know, what are we going to stop doing if we have less resource? And my answer to that is, absolutely, we need to review everything. Maybe some things we're not going to stop doing. We're just going to do them in a different way. And that's a bit about being efficient and being agile. You've already mentioned we've got regional boards doing a great job with volunteers. We've got sport commissions focusing on the discipline. You know, there's an awful lot in that space, and perhaps we just have to take a step back and have a look about how we deal with things as efficiently as possible.
You know, we're talking a lot in our business, John, about strategic alignment, and I'm sure everyone's heard that analogy of the plane that flies for 1 hour. You know, it goes 1 degree off every hour, and then that actually equates to 60 miles in 1 hour going off your intended landing spot. So, you know, when we have complex organisations, and like British Cycling, it's very easy for things to go off or to not be aligned, and, you know, the speed of the organisation, the agility of the is a kind of, it's quite a big thing to try and kind of get together. But I'm guessing, you know, that's what you want the organisation to be, and I guess any good governing body organisation should be like that, you know, there for its members.
Absolutely, and we have an incredible community. We have a really big community. Go back to my point before, actually, our community potentially is everyone that we can reach across the whole population. We have our members, and we're happy to sort of explore membership. And I think there are some improvements to customer journey, to simplicity, to value, to loyalty that we need to make. I guess the point, and I absolutely agree with everything you said, you've got to overlay that also with the environment. So if you think pre-pandemic, you know, the world was a different place, but actually some things were changing. How we were consuming our media in a digital way was changing before the pandemic. Our expectations of buying a ticket to go and watch a sports event was changing. The pandemic has supercharged some of that change. Geopolitical challenges, we live in a quite a frightening world. There wasn't war in Europe before the pandemic, there is now, and look at the implications of that. And from a socioeconomic perspective, cost of living, soaring inflation, everything you face in your day-to-day business, that's impacted our personal lives, but it's also impacted our businesses. And we've just got to, we've got to accept that we live in a different world. So we've got to now cut our cloth accordingly, have that agility, and address the challenges, but not lose sight of those opportunities.
No doubt. Now, you know, look, so the uncomfortable truth is that for sure, BC have been through bit of a difficult time, it could be said, the last five or so years. Perhaps you know, we focus on that, and you no doubt probably had a lens on that in your role parallel to the job now, and probably as an outsider looking in, perhaps how do you think that looked to the outside world when you weren't CEO?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing is perception and reality are definitely two different things, and you will appreciate in your role, Phil, that leadership is about perhaps managing the shades of grey, not everything is binary. Look, undoubtedly, the organisation has faced some reputational challenges, and I'm here, I want to do something to address that in a positive way. Things will happen, and whether we take the narrative around transgender and non-binary, whether we take partnership, whether we take athlete welfare, those things, we are immersed in our community of cycling. There are also some of those are enormous societal problems. So it's just about, you can take two things. One, let stuff happen to you and react, or one, we can try and turn the dial and make sure we are proactive, talk about some of the amazing things that this sport does, some of the amazing people out there. I think we probably can value our volunteers more and celebrate our volunteers more and have that storytelling that then continues to make us commercially attractive, that our members feel valued and they're part of a community. And I'm a realist as well, Phil, so it's all well and good me coming on here saying these things, and you know, by all means, bring me back in 6 months' time, 12 months' time, and get the tape out and measure against it. You know, not all of those things are, I don't have a magic wand. There's no silver bullet, it's not overnight fix. But the one sort of plea to the cycling community is, I think more than ever now, we need a greater sense of unity and to come together, because as one, we will always have our differences and we'll all always have some difference of opinion. But as one, that power is incredible. And I think we can do some amazing things. So I'm here to address the challenges, make a difference, definitely change some of the perception of the organisation, but also things will happen that we just have to work our way through. And, you know, who knows what the next thing, who could have predicted the sort of war in Ukraine for the first time, war in Europe, first time in a lifetime, that just had then such an incredible impact from an energy cost perspective and some of the things we're seeing. And we live in an unstable political environment. That's just that's part of our challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think everybody will, you know, give you the rope, John. What I mean by that is, you know, they'll go, you're out, you're engaging, which I think probably it might be said that perhaps the CEO's perhaps been a bit quiet on, you know, not been on the front foot, perhaps the previous two CEOs. So it's absolutely fantastic that you're here. And I think this will be a really good thing that certainly our audience would want to hear. And, you know, our specialist interest, of course, is sort of the road racing scene, John. And you know, this podcast really is sort of specialising in the road racing scene. And, you know, one of the things that often gets said to me is that BC have been a bit asleep at the wheel with regards to the domestic road racing scene. And, of course, there's been, because of the type of sponsors that you've had in the past, sort of a big focus on participation, you know, mass participation. Or because of the, you know, the other funding that you get, medals. Yeah. And it's been felt that perhaps road racing's been sort of the poor relation in between all of that. And it, then if you look at kind of what's happened to the scene, the number of the National A races that we have, and then the number of Conti teams, which have diminished, the sponsorship environment is shrinking. There's been quite a lot of heads down, I think it's fair to say, on the way that perhaps people perceive the scene has deteriorated. So I just wonder what if you had sort of an initial view about that. I know you were at Lincoln at the weekend, which obviously is an amazing sort of monument flagship. If you want an event that's done right, that's probably it, right? It's a good one to go to. But I just wondered what your sort of your early thoughts were around the domestic road racing scene.
Yeah, look, I think you summarised it perfectly, Phil. I am under no illusions that some of the things that people remember 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago when we were growing up, some of that we will probably never get back to what people think is perfect, ideal, etc. You know, I'm a big believer that perfection doesn't exist. If we aim perfection, we catch excellence, and that's perhaps the journey that we need to go on. I think road racing in particular, I would probably describe it as the squeezed middle. And you've described participation and we have to nurture that, because the more people that get engaged on a bike, then they are prospective athletes, members, whatever. So the start, I think, is in a pretty good place. The end of the continuum, our winning medals, our talent pathways, in a very, very good place. And that's been incredibly well managed. And then you come to the middle, the bit that absolutely is the hardest. And I think it's across the spectrum of clubs, of education, of road racing in particular. We obviously have no more diverse disciplines than ever before. You know, BMX freestyle and urban sports is huge and will only continue to grow. You know, we can come on and talk about the exponential growth of e-bikes that wasn't around 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. I think if you go on a website now to buy a bike, you're probably presented with more e-bike options than you are road bikes. So that's just that shift in the environments. What can we do about it? Yes, we have to have a careful look at it. I think the calendar of events is really important. It's great to see the Dudley event announced. You know, and the team have worked really hard on that. Give my reflections on Lincoln, which are all, you know, absolutely positive. But I just think we need to look at what we can do from a support perspective, areas where we perhaps need to be less interventionist and just let the environment happen, but accepting that we're never going to deliver perfect. And it's also just worth noting the massive shift in the number of professional riders on the World Tour. So I think overall, in men and women, there are about 50 riders. And you look at Thomas leading the Giro, hopefully fingers crossed when the podcast goes out, that's still the case. You look at the success in the tours over the past few years that we haven't had previously. So if we go back to, if we're measuring our experience against what we believe was halcyon, perfect, utopia 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, the environment has shifted. So, you know, hopefully that makes some sort of sense of recognising we're in a different environment. Yes, we need to take a closer look at it. We have no magic wand, and even throwing multiple resource at it, we have less professional teams now in the UK than before. I do think the calendar is important, and I do think we need to step up and support the best opportunities for riders who realise what they are, what is the best, and what are they capable of, and what environment can we as BC provide, and try and make sense of it in that way. There's no easy answer at all, and people, we have, the organisation has less money. We probably operate in £1 billion, I would suggest, industry in cycling across the globe, but some of that's lifestyle. Some of that is the growth in Zwift and what we're seeing in that direction. And some of it is this new growth in people buying e-bikes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, my bit here today is to sort of speak up for the roadies and people are sort of passionate about the road racing scene. You know, conscious that you've got multiple objectives that you and people that you've got to kind of make sure you're serving. And I think kind of on our last episode, or perhaps even the one before, we talked about kind of the fact that, look, the scene isn't sort of on its knees. There's a thriving B scene going on. And obviously, we know we've got a sort of slightly curtailed at National A's. And it looks to me like there's probably quite an easy win in assisting some of the people organising the Bs to take them up to As. Mm-hmm. Because what one of the things we're seeing at the moment is our Conti teams and EDTs going to race abroad for the fitness. And they're going over to Belgium a lot, or they're going over to France. And of course, and that's primarily because they haven't quite got the quality of races here. Yeah. So, conscious there is not a magic wand here. And, no one's coming here thumping the table to say, we need 5 million out your pocket today. Because the reality is, I run a business myself. You can't just magic this stuff up. You've got to go through your listening phase. You've got to then kind of look at your easy wins. You've got to kind of, I guess, present what's doable, because you can't do everything, and much as people want it, you can't. You can only do the bits you think you can do, which might be fairly easy to do, fairly low resource and in your control, and get them done and see whether we can get sort of some improvements, really. But
I absolutely wholeheartedly agree, Phil. And I think what is important is we look at everything. We look at the environment that we're operating in and the financial constraints. We look at race organisers, we look at volunteers and stewards, we look at local authorities and road closures, and we look at everything, and we come out with calendar, clarity, communication. We want to please all the people. I can absolutely guarantee that, and that's leadership is difficult, and you've got to make difficult decisions. But we've just got to make sure that we provide the best in every area of the business, recognising that some of the things that are in a growth phase now weren't around in recent memory. And that's just the sort of instability, the changing environment. But there are many opportunities. And I know we're going to talk about Scotland, but that opportunity in August to see the diversity of the disciplines, I think to the wider population is incredibly exciting.
So let's just sort of quickly park on there, because you've mentioned it about Scotland. Obviously that's an incredible event. I know you're involved in that in a fairly heavy way, so talk to us about what you think the ambition is for that event for the world.
I would describe it as bold and brave, Phil. I mean, bringing together 13 disciplines over 10 days in Scotland, the real focus on Glasgow, but also some fairly rural locations. I'm travelling to Fort William next week to have a look at what they're doing up there. I've been Stirling recently. But I just think from a visibility perspective, there's a curiosity factor. We're going to see cycleball, we're going to see artistic cycling, perhaps certainly for me, for the first time. Yeah. And I just think that opens it up to a different audience. We're going to see some amazing action on the track and on the road. All that, the circuit finishes George Street in Glasgow, and on really technical circuit. I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic. We're going to see lots of para activity, and we're going to see mountain bike, gravity and marathon on some amazing courses. So I think it's got all the ingredients. You know, hopefully the sun will shine in Scotland. We can't promise that. But we've got, you know, strong domestic TV coverage. And we, as the Rugby League World Cup, saw the unbelievable benefit of that. You know, our audiences at times were reaching 3 million people. Some people telling me that the first time they ever watched Rugby League was the World Cup and the wheelchair World Cup, the first time ever for a sport that's 128 years old. And hopefully through the World Cycling, we can do some of that, that people will see Tom Pidcock, amazing athlete, doing amazing things, but we'll also see the diversity of freestyle in BMX, of BMX racing, of mountain, and all of those different things. And I think it's really wonderful that the cycling community is going to come together, and the spotlight of the world is going to be on Scotland for 10 days' time. And talking to friends in Speedway, Speedway isn't one of the 13 disciplines, but they, of their own volition, organised an event in Dunfermline to say, right, we want to be part of this. And also everyone can have a look how great Speedway is. So just a celebration, visibility, and definitely bold and brave.
It sounds fantastic. I know it will be. There'll be significant resources going in to make sure that is, you know, the event it's meant to be. Now, you mentioned TV there, which can be a bit of a contentious issue amongst the road community, John, because, of course, there was a time when the A-Series was televised. And, of course, for funding reasons, of course, that had to get pulled, because I think they were paying a huge amount of money at the time to Eurosport, I think it was there. And it was you know, with the number of viewers, it's becoming difficult to justify, I think, the amount of investment going in versus the viewing. And you described earlier that, that things have moved on. We've seen people like GCN come on the scene and other ways of digital streaming and so on. So I wonder whether you could sort of give any confidence to the, you know, the people that are passionate about the scene, that, that whether that might be something that could be on the consideration list again. And I'm not talking about, you know, another big TV deal, but I'm just saying other ways to bring racing to the lounges of the country.
Definitely on the consideration list, because I think that the sport continues to need visibility in a really busy environment. Again, will we replicate what's happened before? Probably not. Simple business economics of TV production. But you're absolutely right, Phil, that, that things can be done in a slightly different way, and the streaming opportunity. So definitely on the agenda. Just take some time to work through and make sure that we've got a more sustainable business model. It's really interesting. It's some amazing things happening, like the Tom Pidcock last weekend, you know, on the Friday training ride, starting 40th of 41, winning the short course, backing up and winning the long course, you know, TV coverage, but largely people across the UK didn't see that. And that's an amazing, one amazing feat that one amazing athlete has done. And we just need to probably find a way of, some of it's storytelling, some of it is our own content, some of it is heroing some of the amazing athletes as part of the GB programme. But some of it is just, however cycling is more visible, is a really good thing. So on the agenda, happy to maybe come back and talk about that in a few months' time. But there's a theme here, no magic wand, no overnight solution.
Yeah, because I think sort of one of the struggles that I think some of the teams have, and also some of the organisers have, is actually raising sponsorship dollars. You know, I'm a sponsor. I have sponsored up to six teams in one, you know, one season, as well as races. And we also have, you know, a sponsorship deal with Sweet Spot and for the Women's Tour and the Tour of Britain. And, you know, the one thing that they do need is to be able to sell exposure. And of course, what we've seen is a sort of a very narrowing exposure window, where we've gone from being sort of televised back to racing around villages with sort of, you know, 20 people at the side of the road. And that obviously is not a compelling sponsorship sell to sort of any brand. So the one thing I do know that, you know, many of the teams need and many of the race organisers need is a hand with raising sponsorships. I think you've got some really capable organisers out there, as far as I can see. Obviously, you spoke about Dudley moments ago, Chris Lawrence, you know, fantastic. You've got Mark Etches. You've got a load of people doing fantastic work organising these races. But I think there's other people organising the bees that could probably just do with a bit of a hand, frankly. And even that means just using some of your commercial teams to help them raise sponsorship locally to either lift a race or make it more economically viable. Is that something you would consider?
Look, I'd look at it perhaps through a slightly different lens. And it goes back to my point earlier. If the cycling community, those are the most passionate, come together in a unifying way, and if we can enhance the reputation, cycling as a whole, and increase the overall GDP of the sport here domestically. And if we do that, however we do it, everyone then can take the benefit. And, you know, specific to sponsorship, it's hard. Gosh, I've just run a tournament where we had 15 brand new partners, had some blue chip names. It was hard yards, and that took a number of years to get to that position. And it was only done because of our purpose, because of our values, because of our vision and our storytelling. And that's the bit about the hard yards now. There almost needs to be a reset and some positivity. And then more brands will be attracted in whatever way. And it might be to a race, it might be to an organisation. But that GDP level, once that starts to increase, we've seen, we're not on our own. And this is absolutely not an excuse in any shape or form. But if you look at what's happening in athletics at the moment, you know, UK Athletics, friends there who are suffering because of some decisions that have been made around broadcast, that have reduced the level of income in the organisation, that have impacted sponsorship, that have created a real challenge. You know, some might describe it as a crisis. So that's happening in the world. That's not just endemic to cycling and British cycling. So it's a tough nut to crack, but it goes back to that bit about put our best foot forward, be unified, be positive, and then things, you've got more of a chance of being positive than you have of negativity, cynicism, criticism. We need to be counted, but also those that love the sport most, this is the time to play their part as well.
Absolutely, John. And I think what we've always felt with this podcast is actually is just being a critical friend, mm-hmm. you know, actually just sort of raising the issues, but actually not being cynical about them, not being, you know, hypercritical. We've been talking up the B scene a lot.
Absolutely.
You know, not being negative about it, but just saying, look, what do we have? What do we have that we could be proud of and what can we build from?
Absolutely.
You know, and obviously your arrival will be, you know, a nice timing. Because, of course, you know, you can now do your strategic reviews. And, of course, you've got lots of documents already in place, you know, the road ahead and all these sorts of things. But I'm guessing you're going to be reviewing all that stuff anyhow, you know, yeah. in your new role. Because the board will have signed those things off.
Yeah.
We think that's the right way. And then, but you've arrived now and no doubt yeah. will want to just be reviewing everything and
yeah.
doing a new report to the board about what you think you found.
Yeah, and based on simplicity. So let's create the most simplistic route map to success. And that doesn't need to be pages and pages. And I'm sure people, no one wants to hear about strategy. People want to hear about action and direction. And,
yeah.
and simplicity is a really key part to play in that. The board have a part to play, the executive have a part to play, the community have a part to play. But that's what excites me, Phil.
Mm.
And that's why I'm here. And I'm here for the challenge, 28 years worth of experience and, you know, everything I've done. My favorite quote is, without challenge, there is no achievement. And that absolutely sums it up. I like challenge because I do think it leads to achievement. And sometimes with less, you have the ability to do more. Because it focuses the mind, it makes you more disciplined, and I recognise some of that in the early days here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, start, stop, continue is something that we're thinking
Absolutely.
About all the time, and every organisation has to. You literally cannot just keep going with the way you did things, particularly in this very fast-moving external environment like,
yeah.
that we've got. As you described, geopolitical events are changing, governments are changing,
yeah.
Government strategies are changing, funding is changing. All of these things are sort of changing quite dynamically. And I don't think we can sort of rely on anything. Certainly at Brother, we don't. We don't, you know, we just assume that we've got to be hungry all the time and we've got to cut our cloth accordingly all the time and act like a startup. Like, you know, it's kind of the way we try and run our business, even though we're a huge enterprise. We try and be agile, innovative, and never ever think that sort of lunch is coming.
It's an absolutely brilliant approach, and to follow on from the lunch theme, and I it really struck me last week listening to Radio 4, and there was an article about how shopping baskets and how shopping has got more expensive, and it focused on a cheese sandwich, and there are three component parts for cheese sandwich. There's the bread, the spread, and the cheese. It's a third more expensive to make a simple cheese sandwich than it was 12 months ago, and I think if you use that metric and then start thinking about some of the bigger stuff, whether it's the cost of bikes, whether it's closing down town centres to save races, whatever the metric is, measure it on that cheese sandwich. And that, I think, just tells us the size of the challenge. But doesn't mean to say we stop doing things. We probably just need to do some things in a different way.
Mm-hmm. I'm just sort of looping back to road cycling just a moment ago. You mentioned, obviously, some of these, you know, incredible Grand Tour riders that we now see, you know, Theo Geoghegan-Hart, Tom Pidcock, Geraint Thomas, Luke Rowe, you know, all of these folks that have made this transition up to World Tour. And I guess during that time, they'd been through the stepping stones. And I think one of the sort of frustrations or observations that people have said is that with kind of the road scene as it is now, those stepping stones aren't quite so obvious.
Mm.
And if you were a, you know, young cyclist now thinking, how can I make a career of this?
Mm.
You'd probably have a bunch of people saying, well, you know, if you're not, unless you're on the talent program in BC, it's probably going to be quite difficult for you to make a career out of this. Whereas probably, you know, halcyon days go back 10 or 15 years when we had some amazing Conti teams in the UK, you know, riders earning professional good salaries, earning a living out of cycling. And if we contrast that with today now, we've gone sort of, we've shrunk our Conti teams down to two, Trinity and St. Piran. What would your advice be if you were a 16-year-old budding road cycling professional in the UK? Would it be just to move abroad?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I understand that properly enough to give an informed view. But I go back to participation through inspiration. And I think is absolutely critical. And whether that's a road or the track or the next Kai White or whatever that is, and we need visibility to be able to do that. And also the point I made about if we've got 50 men and women that are more than earning a living on the World Tour and being incredibly successful, we have done something right. and it's just to understand maybe the steps need to be slightly different. The UK road domestic scene will always be important. It maybe is playing a slightly different role than it was 5 or 10 years ago. I don't understand the intricacies of that, and that's why active listening, education, outreach, go and talk to as many people as possible. I had a wonderful hour last week with Ed Clancy. Ed, just a ball of energy. And obviously got his multiple hats, active travel commissioner for South Yorkshire, and a really interesting in e-bikes. And it's just really interesting listening to him sort of split and navigate between active travel, leisure and recreation, and sport. And my question, you know, if you had the golden pound, of what bit would you put on each bit? And I think that's quite an interesting philosophical challenge for us all in the future, because maybe brands, maybe the government are thinking in that way. I think we all need to think, protect the things that are really important, absolutely fundamentally important, and maybe then take that less interventionist approach to let the environment almost sort itself out. If we didn't have 50 GB riders on the World Tour and we weren't winning on the track, on the field of play, then we definitely, sport has a problem. It is surpassing perhaps expectations at that top end.
And I have to say, I think it's absolutely fantastic that our former Olympians and Paralympians are stepping into these roles as active travel commissioners. I mean, who better sort of as an inspiration and somebody that really understands what it means to train on the road, or to, you know, to understand what health and fitness can do for a population, than people like Ed Clancy or Dame Sarah Story? You know, absolute kudos to them for doing it.
I went away from with Ed absolutely exhausted, because it's just an absolute ball of energy, and you couldn't get someone who's more passionate. But he's been there, you know, he has been there, and he's hugely respected. And I think as agents of change, you know, brilliant that our athletes at the end of the career are transitioning into that advocacy role. And yeah, would love to help support them however we can do that.
Absolutely. Now, one of the other things that sort of you know, was on my mind was, you know, pre-COVID, you actually had somebody here, Eric Rousell, who was in post to basically kind of babysit the road scene effectively, to be that vocal person, that individual person internally within BC who would champion effectively that middle bit of, hey, what about road racing? I think Eric, you know, obviously isn't here anymore. That probably might be, we think of life now, don't we, in sort of pre-COVID and after COVID. So I'm definitely thinking pre-COVID, I think, with this one. So do you think at any point that you might consider John to sort of reappoint somebody to sort of be that guardian of the road scene?
Yeah, I mean, we replaced Eric with Catherine McClelland directly, and Catherine supported by Jonathan Day. Jonathan's been here in the organisation, I think, probably getting on for about 10 years, leading our sport and participation element. So neither of them professional cyclists in the way that Eric was, but certainly I think are here to make a difference and work out the calendar that we talked about to support our series events, and make sure that proportionately, you know, we do what we set out to do and provide those opportunities. So it just goes back, Phil, to the complex environment with which we operate in. We have some brilliantly talented people who are passionate about cycling, and to understand those challenges and then put our best foot forward.
Yeah, well, you know, John, you know, conscious of time today and that you've been super generous and give me an hour of your time, particularly in your first month. So I'm going to sort of just start wrapping up, because it's great that if you can come back and perhaps we can keep our conversation going, because I know sometimes, you know, it's very easy when you're doing other such interviews with media who've got specific agendas, or they want to position something in a certain way. You know, we don't have any other agenda really, other than to see domestic road racing thrive and still be, you know, an important pillar of cycling in the country, honestly speaking. So, you know, it's great to sort of have this sort of direct dialogue with you to, yeah, just get inside your head, hear, you know, from the man himself, what you think is going on. And I think, so I really want to thank you for your time today. So now, before I go, I did think I wanted to ask you something. You obviously said you're a cyclist, and that's always a big tick in the box for the cycling community. Oh, isn't that CEO a cyclist? So you obviously are a cyclist, John. So what bike do you ride? Come on.
I've got a mountain bike. I would describe myself as a leisure recreational cyclist. I run a lot. I ran the Manchester Marathon recently should have run Leeds Marathon on Sunday, but instead went to Lincoln. So that is
very
my
good.
Commitment.
Very good.
But ride a mountain bike. My favourite red mountain bike shoes broke last week. Red is my colour. So I was devastated to have to change those. But yeah, I love getting out more from a mental well-being perspective. I remember growing up, probably between the age of 14 and 21, had a road bike, and every day of every holiday I'd be out on my bike cycling the roads, which probably were slightly safer than they are in the modern day. And cycling, I'm a Tour de France super fan, been to the Tour so many times, was there in 89 for that duel between Fignon and Le Monde on the Champs-Élysées. That will live with me forever. That
amazing.
Was absolutely incredible. Grew up, Stephen Roach, Sean Kelly. Yeah, just growing up watching those and then transitioning through. And probably like many people my age, Lance Armstrong was a hero, an absolute hero. And obviously when that unfolded, that was pretty devastating and sort of made you question pretty much everything about sport and some things about life. So fell back in love with the Tour, and I just think the Tour de France is just such an amazing event, and obviously pleasure to work on it in 2014.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me just quickly ask you about that, then, because that's sort of like your dream event then, surely, for somebody who's so passionate about Tour de France, to suddenly be involved in sort of delivery, you know, the man involved in the delivery. So just talk to us about your highlights of those 3 days.
It was how could I best describe it? Externally facing, just amazing. I am good friends with Simon Wilkinson, a cycling photographer, and Simon's iconic images from that, I think, something just perfectly summing up behind the scenes. I mean, I came in quite late. I was only in the role for 4 months. We only had 10 months to actually deliver it from the ASO, handing over the keys to the organisers, and closing some of the rural roads in North Yorkshire. Were just, you know, there's some tough moments in there, everything that the guys in Scotland are going through. And then the sun came out, the crowds came out, and more and more and more with the colour. And you can still now cycle around Yorkshire and see all those yellow bikes that were there in 2014. So it was an amazing opportunity. Also involved in the transition of the riders, we could only take them to Peterborough before they started in Cambridge, part of the regulations before then into London, and then transitioning out the country. Amazing moments. I think the reflections of the organisers and UK government and everyone involved is bring things here to the UK. We're not only a safe pair of hands, but people will get behind the sport, and go back to those iconic images. Just utterly amazing.
Yeah, nice shout out for Simon Wilkinson there at SW Picks, everybody.
Indeed.
I'm sure you're already following Simon, one of our great photographers in the UK. And it's hard to believe that's only 10 years on, isn't it? It's hard to believe that was nearly 10 years ago. Where's that time gone?
Where's that time gone? And you think what happened in London in 2012 and then 2014 and that success that we've had, which started with Chris Boardman, that occasion in yellow, and then Brad Wiggins winning, and then the domination of Froome, and then Thomas, and then all of the success, Pidcock stage win last year. So that when I was growing up, my early memories, following Stephen Roach as the Irish rider, you could count on one hand the number of a cyclist in the Tour with GB colours. And now to fast forward to what we have now, we have a plethora of talent, lots to celebrate. Hopefully the Tour will come back in the not too distant future. That will be an amazing thing for us all to aim for. And those stepping stones of August, of Paris, we've got so much to look forward to in road track and the para-disciplines in Paris. Who knows then, the Tour. And then everything else, Tour of Britain. Obviously there's some work to be done on Tour Series and on Women's Tour, our National Series. But my reflections of spending a Sunday in Lincoln, just amazing, just absolutely fantastic. Every single bit of it, from the organisation to the backdrop, the cathedral, thinking the Magna Carta is just in that building over there, the crowds, the weather, the route, the Michael Gate, seeing all the cyclists riding the drain and off the cobbles, and every single component part, and getting out in a car and actually seeing the course. It's been a I'm not sure whether it was strategic, my timing, that's my first event. Well, that's a pretty pretty great thing to aim for going forward.
Well, the bar's certainly been set very high there, John. Now, before we leave, when I was stalking you on your LinkedIn and having a quick look at it, I noticed a post that you that you'd written where you'd given sort of four things that you thought about, you know, when you're leading a business, which was consider your legacy, look after your people, learn from others, and know what you stand for. So I just want to zoom forward now, you know, let's call it 10 years from now, John, and let's just say that, you know, you're retiring, obviously way before your time, of course, and you're judging yourself against the legacy that you feel that you've left. What do you think that legacy is that you'd like to have left, you know, ultimately when you've served your tenure here?
I don't see myself retiring at 60, Phil. That's a great aspiration. I've got far too much energy. I think it's really simple. Make a difference. Mm. In any organisation, come in and make a difference. And I can very proudly reflect on what I've done with the Rugby League World Cup. We have made a difference. Made a difference to people's lives. Some of the people that we reached out to and impacted on have said, you have changed my life. And I think that is incredibly powerful. If we can do some of that here with BC, which we are more than capable of doing, I would love that to be a legacy. And it's not just about me. I am one vulnerable human being leading an organisation full of incredibly talented people with a community that's very passionate, that at times I'm sure like any other community will have something to say. And if we do all of those things that you've listed, if we listen, if we learn, actions most definitely speak louder than words. Mm-hmm. And then measure me on, has John made a difference? Are the organisation in a better place, having to move forward, whenever that metric is, I'll be very, very pleased with that and very much up for that. I'm here to be accountable. And yeah, just so privileged to be in an organisation that I think has so much more growth in a sport that I think is absolutely, utterly wonderful.
And there you have it, folks, from the man himself, John Dutton, Chief Executive of British Cycling. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for the opportunity, Phil.
It's a wonderful to hear there, Phil, from British Cycling's new Chief Executive, John Dutton. Excellent job with the interview. I think you got the major points, the major questions in for fans of domestic road racing. One thing that sort of struck home with me is a phrase that John used again and again, make a difference. He's keen to get into British Cycling and make change where change is required. Did that sort of resonate with you?
Without a doubt. Obviously, you know, I do a lot in the leadership space, effectively looking at what effective leadership looks like, what good leadership looks like. And I saw within John somebody who's a very, very purpose-driven and very values-driven leader. And I think you've only got to look back at his 12 years at Rugby League to sort of really see what sort of an individual he is. I found him actually very straight-talking. I found him very open. There weren't any questions that he was ducking. I think where he can't answer things or he feels that he still needs more information, he kind of says that. I think he was very honest to sort of own the idea of accountability and accepting what's gone and trying to move on. But my overall impression was he's very future focused. He really wants to sort of see a slightly different picture for the future than exists today. He recognises there's going to be some change. He recognises he's going to have to do that with limited resources, perhaps limited financial resources. The environment that we're all in now around sponsorship and income streams is very, very different. So I think he's a very pragmatic individual. I definitely walked away thinking, I think they've got a really, really good candidate there who might be somebody that can really begin to drive change within British Cycling over the coming decade.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he just described himself at one point, Phil, in the interview as a realist. No magic wand, no silver bullet, no overnight fixes, but at the same time, very positive. You know, let's maximize the resources that we do have. Let's do things in a different way. If that's more efficient, it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to stop doing things. I thought that was a reassuring message. Everything's on the table, up to and including restoring coverage to the National Road Series. That might not be broadcast television. It might be a different solution, but it's certainly up for discussion. So there was a lot of positivity there, a lot of willingness to get out and get involved. And what clearer sign than that he sat down and spoke to you for an hour, 4 weeks into the job?
Yes, that was. And one of the things we talked about on our last podcast was was that first 100 days, if you recall. When we look at sort of generalized, when a new CEO comes in to see, they've got this 100-day kind of listening phase, the strategic sensing phase. And John is clearly deep within that. He said he'd already had a couple of town halls with all the members and colleagues at British Cycling. You know, he's obviously already been to Lincoln. So he's out there right at the coalface, beginning to sort of really see how things work. And I think once you get this concept of sort of how the work works, you know, we talk about that a lot at our place. How does the work work? You actually talk to the people who are doing that work day on day about their frustrations, where things could be doing better. Then do you sort of zoom the helicopter back out again and go, okay, now I've done all of that. These are the sort of the things that I think that we can begin to change. So I think at the minute, John is sort of inhaling the entire sport. And that's one hell of a thing to do, because of course, it's not just road racing. It's mountain bike, it's speedway, it's BMX. Oh, and looming on the horizon, you've got sort of the Worlds in Glasgow, which will probably dominate a lot of the strategic planning, time, attention, operational things. And of course, the experience that he had in delivering the Tour de France Grand Départ back in 2014 will, I think, stand him in and British cycling in really good stead.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, Phil. And wonderful that he did go to the Lincoln Grand Prix. I mean, what an event to start your stewardship of British cycling at. Absolutely blue-ribboned monument of the domestic calendar. And let's hope that sparks a love affair with the National Road Series. Something else that jumped off the recording at me, Phil, he said, hopefully the tour will come back. That would be an amazing thing for us all to aim for. Now, wouldn't that be something if we could get the Tour de France back for a second Grand Départ?
Absolutely. And look, clearly, I think in John's agenda, what he first wants to do is make the Worlds an amazing success for all the different cycling disciplines that are going to turn up, for the world's eye to be, you know, on Glasgow and its surrounding areas. Then for me, that is the launch pad for that. So like all of these things is, let's make the Worlds a huge success. Let us in the UK, all the people that love cycling, let's give that the support it needs. And let's then hope that that becomes that launch pad for another Tour de France, Grand Départ sometime in our future.
Absolutely. Well, chapeau, Phil. Wonderful interview. Brilliant scoop. Excellent to have the new chief executive of British Cycling on the Brother UK Cycling Podcast.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.